A Portrait of Love by Barbara Cartland. Read by Catherine Drysdale for Saga Egmont. Author's note. Many of the magnificent collections of pictures in the ancestral homes of Great Britain are, fortunately, still intact. My son-in-law, the Earl Spencer, has at Althorp in Northamptonshire one of the finest collections in the country. He possesses 20 Van Dykes, so beautiful that one is entranced by the artist's technical brilliance and his psychological insight. Born in 1599, he died in 1641, but in that short time produced hundreds of amazing fine pictures. Charles I settled an annual pension of £200 on him, presented him with two houses and gave him a knighthood. No artist deserved it more. Chapter 1, 1841. Fedora was dusting the sitting room when Jim came in through the door. He was a small, wiry little man getting on in years, with his hair just turning grey over his ears. But he had the honest eyes that reminded her of the devotion of a spaniel.
"'Tis no use, Miss Fedora," he said. "He won't let us have any more food till we pays for it."
Fedora sighed. It was what she had expected, but the only shop in the village had been exceedingly lenient over their account, which had risen higher and higher, until she was ashamed to even ask for a loaf of bread. "We shall have to sell something," she said, speaking more to herself than to Jim.
"I could take one of them pictures up to London, Miss Fedora."
"We know we have no right to sell them," Fedora answered. "They belong to Mr. Philip. And what will he say when he comes home to find them gone?"
"I dare say as he won't think the pictures important if you and the master be in your graves," Jim said with unanswerable logic.
Fedora sighed again. She had fought resolutely against selling the last assets the house possessed while her brother was away in the East, trying to make his fortune. She had always thought that to part with the pictures that had been collected by generations of Colwyns all down the centuries would be like betraying her own blood. The collection at Mount Sorrel was famous, and it would have attracted more attention if they ever entertained, which they could not afford to do. It was difficult to understand how her father had managed to carry on for so long in the great house, which had passed from father to son since the reign of Queen Elizabeth. He had inherited a pile of debts, which had been like a millstone round his neck, and looked like continuing to be the same for his only son. The owner of Mount Sorrel Manor was fiercely proud of his heritage, and would have continued to live at Mount Sorrel if it had been nothing but a hole in the ground. As it was, he and his daughter occupied only a few rooms in the great house, and in the rest the ceilings fell down, the rats crept out of the wainscoting, the badly fitting windows let in the rain, and the holes in the roof grew larger year by year. And yet in the rooms they occupied where there were threadbare carpets, curtains that were nothing but rags, and chairs that were in such bad state of repair that it was difficult to sit on them in any comfort, there were pictures on the walls worth a fortune. They were, of course, entailed onto Philip, and after him his sons and grandsons, and the future generations that would follow him. If there were trustees to see that the pictures were kept intact, Fedora had never heard of them, and she fancied that, if they had ever existed, most of them must be now dead. But there were no need for trustees or guardians to preserve what every Colwyn thought of as something so precious that in the past they had died to preserve it and were prepared to do so again. Looking around the walls, she thought it was astounding to see pictures that any museum would have pleaded on their knees to possess. There was a Holbein, which portrayed the artist's uncannily shrewd insight into human nature, and the colours in his unique style seemed to tone in a remarkable way with the Hogarth hanging next to it. Because she knew that she could not bear to part with either of these,